Welcome back to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. We are so pumped to bring on MVH Mutant Vinyl Hardcore for his third episode. This episode kind of takes a look at the background or the more meta, the ideas of what it looks like after all this career and everything. And we are so excited that he is willing to share and was willing to share 3 weeks worth of content with us. And so we can't thank Rich enough. If you want more Toys on Tap, you can like, follow, rate, review wherever you get podcasts. You can help us out. Review this podcast. It gets more eyes, more ears, everything to Toys on Tap, and it costs you nothing. You want to support the show even more? You can follow us on all socials at Toys on Tap. And if you want to jump on and support us even more, patreon.com/toys on tap. That's where you find the extra stuff when we post it. Now let's get to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. I'm pumped. This is episode 3 of 3, kind of the more philosophical one that kind of It's going to take some reflecting today and take some take a look at like lessons learned and that kind of stuff. So I'm pumped about that. But yeah, people are loving these episodes.
Yeah, I'm happy. I mean, everybody that's, you know, I've spoken to, they've said, oh, they enjoyed it. So, I mean, I think it's good too for some documentation. Especially at this point, at least my thoughts, and I can always reflect back on it and, you know, go over it and see if, what I said was accurate, or, you know, is it holding up? You know, what I know is funny. I mean,
yeah,
I realized I am absolutely terrible with my dates. Yeah. I mean, I was going through my shop and I found like flyers from old shows, that the Super 7 show. And I saw that Krullis, that release date was 2012. I was like, really? Was that long ago? So to everybody that's listening, take my dates with a grain of salt. You might have to step each date back a year there, a couple of years there. I thought the dates were accurate, but it could be anywhere in the 2008 to 2012 bracket for the beginning stuff, and then 2012 to current for, like, you know, the stuff you've seen right before the pandemic. And I think the pandemic too was kind of what threw me all off, because this, you know, it seems like for everybody, like, that period in time is like a time war, right? I mean, like, here we are 2026 and it's 6 years past, and I'm still, we still talk about it like it was yesterday.
I mean, what's weird about the 2020 thing, I don't do conspiracies or any of that stuff, but there is one conspiracy that is like, there's one conspiracy that is so much, it's so crazy, because it says something like, after 2020, because it like sent all of our nervous systems in such a shock, that the world just moves so much faster now.
It feels like it, man. It's strange. I mean, I used to break my father's stones because of, like, everything to him was like, it's just 10 years ago. I'm like, dude, like, it's way longer than 10 years ago. And now I'm doing it my damn self. I'm like, come on. My wife was even break my balls about it. She goes, it's not like your dad. I'm like, damn. But so the dates I'm saying on things, they're close, but it can vary, you know, by a year or 2 years in either direction from the day I said. So, I mean, I guess it doesn't really matter ultimately at the end of the day, because, you know, it happened so long ago. We're looking at like the beginning of like when I started something, and who actually really, you know, writes down the exact dates of this stuff, like when I started this or that. I mean, because I didn't expect to be where I am, you know what I mean? So I really didn't document very well.
All those dates and stuff, you've been in it for so long. So of course those dates are going to be hard to track, but let's introduce you, just like the other two episodes. Please introduce yourself. Tell us who you are, what you do.
I am Rich Montaneri of Mutant Vinyl Hardcore. I make Safui. I just an overall artist, a collector, and father, and husband.
Heck yeah. We're kind of going to talk through, I mean, I want you to kind of reflect over your career. I think that's the thing that I really want to do today with you, because I think when people interview you, they probably just ask you directed questions like we've been doing in the past couple of weeks. But I kind of want to leave this open and broad question for you.
Sure.
When you look over your career over the last however many years, what are some of the like first things that start to pop up that either fill you with joy, places you wish you learned things quicker, things you wish you did differently, all of those things? Let's start tapping into those.
I think overall, I mean, I think this whole conversation from the first app to the second app, we kind of touched a little bit of everything, and doing so, it's definitely helped me reflect on my own, you know, career, and you know, this just how long I've been doing this for. I mean, like time goes by, it does go by very fast. I mean, like COVID aside, even before that, it still goes by pretty fast, you know. So it's, you know, in hindsight, you know, I it's hard to say, like, what would I do differently? I think everything has its purpose for where I am right now. You kind of have to, nobody really wants to go through the shit, right? I mean, but like in reality, like the whole, all the suffering or all the hardships or all the struggles and whatever it is, like you have to go through it so that you can appreciate what you do get out of it. Hopefully, if it does go your way, you know, unless you have those struggles, you won't understand just how special it is. The good times are, you know. I mean,
yeah.
This is, you know, I'm kind of always contemplating this stuff, anyways. I mean, when I work, you know, again, I'm alone. I have my own studio. I'll have, you know, I'll listen to a podcast or sometimes just music or nothing, and that's when, you know, I get to really think about things, and that's how, you know, I spend my time, you know, planning for the future or, you know, going over what I've done in the past to help do what I'm working on that project. And I think a lot more people can really benefit from, I don't want to say isolation, but a little bit of isolation when you're, you know, in the boredom of that. Because that's, you know, especially with today's world, everybody is so glued to their phones, so glued to, you know, not being present in the moment. And it's that boredom is what, you know, when you really do find your, you know, the creativity.
Yeah, we're in such a weird spot where it's like you have to feed this dragon, this demon that like social media is, which then causes you to live and be invested in your phone. And I love the idea of just like you need to be isolated every once in a while to kind of think through your own life. Like don't take in what anyone else says. Just kind of go over and process your own shit.
Yeah. I mean, I think the problem is everybody kind of, everything you have in your life is kind of just a product of what you put into it. So even with social media, I mean, I don't demonize it, because you know it is what you is. So if you're just scrolling on Instagram looking at videos of puppies and kittens all day long, you're gonna see nothing but puppies and kittens. If you're pulled into the negativity and looking for, like, you know, whether it be politics, religion, like whatever it is, you can easily be sucked into that too, and then your whole life becomes that. So it's just really like you have to have some kind of discipline to be like, I'm not doing that today. And I think that's what's a lot of us have kind of lost along the way, is like the discipline to be like, no, I'm not doing that. I mean, so just being in that, and every time I've gone to Japan, but this last time being there for a month, it really was, you know, like, I hope it's kind of like a line in the sand career-wise for me, because there was the very first time that I got to really, you know, ingrain myself in the culture, and, you know, just be, I was there alone. I didn't have to, you know, worry about what's going on with the day-to-day life. I was just there focused on building relationships and then looking for inspiration for what I wanted to do, making, you know, toys and design going forward. So, I mean, like with that alone, like I was on social media minimally. I didn't have access to, you know, American TV and news and all that. I mean, like what? So every morning I get up, I have, you know, I help my wife or watch my wife get the kids ready for school. And then we have coffee, right? Yeah. And then we have coffee. And like, we have that time, we sit there and like, for the longest time, we would just watch, you know, we put the news on in the background and like everybody, man, you have your coffee, then you watch something on TV and especially the news and you get enraged and you're like, this is bullshit and yada, yada, yada. And then your whole day kind of starts off on that headspace, right? But like when I was away, didn't have that. So for a full month, I was kind of like, I didn't hear politics. I didn't hear the arguments. I didn't hear like the arguing over every possible topic you can think of that is social media. And it was nice. So like, as I come back home, I was like, I want to try to continue that on. So like in the morning time, we don't even watch the news now. I put on like Animal Planet and put on like David Attenborough. And like, I'm going to sip my coffee and talk to you and listen to this guy because he's much more calming to listen to. And then, you know, by the time we're done, I'm ready to get on my day. I'm like, all right, the negativity's not there. And then, you know, like you can't help. You don't want to have, you know, put your head in the sand and not pay attention to what's going on around you. So like it's going to get to you one way or the other somehow through social media and clips. But I think if this, you know, a lot more people kind of tried at least a little bit throughout the day to not engage with everything that's kind of being force-fed on them, it would be so much more healthy to your headspace, your creativity, your relationships around you. I mean, like, so, I mean, this, again, this trip was one of those things, and not just for it being career-wise, but just in a headspace, I'm like, I want to keep this. I mean, like, I've never had that a month where, you know, I had that. Like, not, I mean, like, and I feel I'm totally blessed. And I know, like, this is not the average situation for most people. So I know that everybody can't do that. But, like, there's got to be a way in which you can say, all right, I can slowly start to try to disengage from all this negativity around me.
Let's pause just a dang minute. If you're wondering where is Toys on Tap going to be this year, we are going to Collected Con. We will be in Pasadena Designer Con. We will be at Las Vegas Designer Con. We had 4 shows this year that we're really excited to be a part of. Indie Toy LA happened in February, and it was an amazing show. So we're so pumped. So if you want to come say hi, come see what we're doing, come pick up work, do all the cool stuff, come see us at one of the shows. We have a booth. We would love to see you. Yeah. You know, I think this is a good pivot in talking about Japan as a whole and what it kind of did for you. I mean, you've talked about going there over and over again and that you've been there multiple times. But this one has kind of set something different, even in how you're communicating while you're there, when you get back, even in how you're communicating in a future career. Mm-hmm. What is that shift, if you can articulate it?
I mean, when we're going through this career here and you're everything you kind of like, especially like, I can only speak for Americans, right? Or somebody that's not living in Japan per se, you create everything outside looking in, right? So like you know, there's some toys that like I've only ever seen photographs of, and I was able to see them that way. And you kind of create characters based on that. When you finally see them in person, you're like, that doesn't even look like the photo, right? So like so what I based like this character on doesn't even necessarily look like the toy I based it on, because it's just. So there's that aspect of this not being around toy shops that sell this kind of stuff. Then, you know, what else? I mean, there's the social aspect of it where, you know, again, like being out here, you're not there with the possibility of interacting with other toy makers that are making the same kind of art that you're making. So you don't get to either, you know, form that community, pick their brains, even if you're not, you know, like just being in the air. So you can even go to shows where it's like, I don't necessarily have to be friends with this person, but like I can at least go see their work in person, you know? And that would help, that helps you have a better understanding for it. So like being there for this career that I chose, I mean, like if you're looking to make soft vinyl toys like Kaiju as a full-time kind of career, or at least what you're going to invest your time into, it's very helpful. I mean, over the very beginning of my career, I didn't have that cash to do both, where I had to either pick production or go on vacation. And year after year, I was like production. So like, I didn't get to go to Japan until, I think it was 3 years ago. And it was just like, again, pandemic came. I was like, you know, like all those years where I was like, I'll make it next year. After that was over, I was like, I am not going to waste any time. You know, like I'm not wasting any time. I'm going to make sure, like, I'm going to find a way to get paid, you know, put the money aside to pay for these trips. And I'm glad that I did. And then like, it's weird because, you know, of course I would like to have gone there sooner, but going there now after, like, again, I've had successes and failures, and going there now, I'm definitely more focused on like, what am I looking for? You know, like what exactly am I looking for? And then like that being now is more like I'm looking for the relationships between other artists, the factories. Just, you know, this is where I spent a large portion of my life investing into. And at least now I know what I'm looking for. When earlier in my career, it would have been like, yeah, it's cool, man, I'm going to go see this. But like, I don't think I would have been as focused or, you know, just in that headspace where now I am.
Yeah. I think too, what was interesting about this is you even had shifts outside of that, that were like, the food sucks in America. Yes. The government, it was just like, it was something that we watched, like kind of clicked over, and it was like, oh, you're eventually going to move. Like that's what's happening.
Yeah. 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 I mean, don't get me wrong. Like I love America. This is my home, and I'm very pro American, but
yeah,
you know, career wise, that's the, you know, that is the place where I need to dedicate that time to, because that is the place where my career comes from, right? So I'm American by my culture, but by my career, it all stems from Japan. So it's interesting now, especially having the time to have reflected on these things over the years, growing as a man, as a husband, a father, seeing what I really want to do going, again, we talk about buying things going into the future. I definitely have a clearer picture of what I'm looking for again in my life. You know, I mean, like, it feels like I'm 47, right? I mean, we all kind of go through these phases, you know, like it feels like every decade is, at least for me, is this all been drastically different, you know? 20s, 30s, coming to the end of my 40s, that's a 30-year window where like each 10 years was these massive pieces of my life that are completely different in what I've learned, what my goals were. Like, you know, earlier on, the goals are today, I would be laughing at it because like that's just not what I'm looking for. And again, like now looking into the future, like I'm looking to go my 50s, my 60s, hopefully 70s, whatever you want to name it, going forward. That's a long time. Like, what do I want to do? Like, I mean, my kids will get older. They're not going to stay babies forever. You know, they're like my littlest is 6, you know? So like, you got, this time is going to pass by. And I like to set that up so that, you know, as I grow older, I like to have that, I like to transition to that more mentor role where I can help other artists, you know, get to where they want to be as well. I mean, like there was a lot I didn't get help with, and it was, you know, very frustrating, especially with things that could have been helped that people chose not to. And I want to try to help other artists coming up do, because I do feel like this is a career path for a lot of people. I mean, I think a lot of people could be doing this full time. It's you know, clearly it's not for everybody, but I think there's a lot of people that that could and should be doing this. And I think it's you know, whatever I've learned, I like to try to start going in that direction. As an artist, I mean, like I see that, you know, I love now, you know, the idea of doing, you know, IP work, my own original work, and then also accepting that it's okay to have, you know, production done that's not all by your own hands. You know, I don't have to kill myself. You know, when earlier I'd be like, no, it has to all be done by me. Like, no, I've gotten more comfortable. Like, oh, no, there are factories out there that can accomplish what I'm looking to accomplish. This is all possible. I don't have to drive myself into the ground anymore. You know, I can have the things I want, and it will be good. It'll, you know, it will give me the opportunity to grow, you know. And this, you know, I you know, yeah. So that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, I think what's interesting too when we think about that is like you've been in this scene for so long, and you have been able to and now are like really able to be kind of picky and choose whether or not you want to work with certain people or choose whether you want to work with certain brands and we kind of talked about like the reality of like your goals or what you thought were your goals were probably either not the direction you want to go or really small goals compared to what you want to accomplish now.
Right. Yeah.
So kind of like in being in this for so long, what's it like now to be able to choose? You're at at this fork in the road where you get to choose which direction your career goes and you get to see it.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. That's for sure. I mean, because, you know, I can see where some people can get drunk off the power of being, I don't have to do X, right? Or saying like, I have enough people wanting what I have that I can demand X. I mean, like, it's just, I could see how it's easy for some people to fall into that trap. But again, going through the things I've gone through, I can recognize that it is a trap. And I try to, you know, help others see that as well. That is, does it have to be these weights?
Yeah. I mean, that's the, you have a gift now.
Yeah.
Being like in this for so long where you now get to see like, oh, this is going to damage or make me do well. And so that's, I mean, an amazing thing. Looking over, because you've kind of, we've seen your career as if you're doing your own stuff by hand. You have the factory stuff going. And then we see these collaborations that do happen. I've seen toys pop up. I mean, you've worked with Unbox. I've seen toys pop up at like Kaijufornia, toys that were at DesignerCon. How are you now functionally working within these collaborations at this point in your career? Is this something that you're seeking out? Is it like, these are people that I really want to work with?
I think so. I mean, like, I think with every collaboration I've had, there's been something to learn from it. Some positive, some negative, but they all kind of help you see everything broadly, right? Like, I'm able to say, I have more patience to think. But yeah, no, I am able to know more now, like, all right, this is the kind of person I want to work with. This is what my ultimate goal from this is. I know that, you know, how to treat collaborations and talk to the person I'm working with, that I can make it so that they understand that like all the choices that I'm looking for are clearly on the table, so that they're not insulted if I come out and say something, either it would be a critique or how I want to handle releases or end it or start it, however it is. Like I have a better way of approaching it now. I have a little more patience with people. And, you know, I'm also aware of my flaws and, you know, like the mistakes that I made. And like, I'm more open to, you know, not getting so hot-headed with my critiques of myself. I mean, like I'm also flawed, you know what I mean? So like, I've learned how to handle that too. So like when I'm working with somebody, I can even recognize, oh, I'm starting to go down this path of I'm the problem here. I don't want to be the problem to that person. So like, it helps you teach you how to go through this. And again, like with this knowledge, I you know, it helps me pick and choose who I want to work with, what I want to do, and how to enjoy this more. You know, I mean, because I think overall in the end, like I hope to do this until the day I die. And I don't want to be struggling with the same questions over and over. Like, why does this keep happening? So like,
yeah,
I can now pick and like, I can, you know, the people that I want to be happy with, whether it be the artists or the factory, I'm trying to make and do my best to make sure that the people I choose to work with in any capacity is a healthy relationship.
Here we go. This is what I know you are waiting to hear, project updates on the things that we've got going on with Toys on Tap. Firstly, we got two new claw colorways that we are so excited for. We're doing an amazing like blue gray look one, and so we're really excited about that. And then we're bringing the OG colorway with the green and the yellow nails. We thought that those two would be really cool. When they come in, 25 will go online and the other 50 of each will just go at the shows, and that's where you will have to get them. We still have some of the other ones. I think they're sold out online, but if you missed your chance, you will see them at conventions. So we're really excited. Queso Jones ships this week. I'm really excited to have that. We've been waiting a long time. It's been a long process, but we are so excited. The packaging is here. We are just waiting for the toy, and then my wife and I will be cracking into shipping, and you will get those. The last KMB is in the middle of production. They are starting to pull the vinyl, which we're really excited about. Stay tuned on that. We will have more updates coming. And our next Kickstarter that will launch with our friends over at Depressed Monsters, Mr. Ryan, we are so pumped to bring the first ever Yearman soft vinyl toy to life. We cannot believe that we get to partner with an artist that we absolutely look up to. So if you want to stay up on any of those things, what we're doing, that's what's going on with Toys on Tap. We have a newsletter and there's updates on the Instagram and all kinds of good stuff. So thank you for all the support.
Yeah, which sets a good tone, right? Like sets a tone, especially someone who's in your position. You're setting a tone for a community at large with how you interact with people. And I've told people before, like we don't need a lot of assholes in this. Like no. If there's one or two, that's fine, but we don't need a lot of them. We can't survive.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Yes, clearly we don't want that. I mean, people are people though, and I think it's everybody's perspective too is different. Like the people that are assholes, their perspective is like, I'm not the asshole, you're the asshole. So it's like just again, having that perspective, like, all right, at least I can. Being an artist looking at the community that collects my stuff, I can help even them navigate like, hey man, that guy's not such a bad dude. You're just not, you don't got to be friends with that person, but like understand where they're coming from. I can help people. And I've done that in the past too. Like I've had fans that are of mine that get into issues with each other. I'm like, guys, like this is, you're just misunderstanding each other here. And then, you know, try to help people work it out. So like in the, again, with the role I play, whether it being the trying to help the community aspect of it, my fans, people I work with, it all comes as like this massive picture.
Yeah. Let's talk through some goals for MVH. We see that over the course of a career, you kind of get to do all kinds of stuff. There's two lanes that kind of happen. Either you stay in your lane, you perfect your craft, you paint all those things, or you start producing all these different like mediums of stuff, plushies and all that. You've stayed with soft vinyl and you have been
doing it by hand, doing all that stuff, and then working with factories on larger stuff. What are some of the larger goals that you have going forward? Because, I mean, you're right. You're closing in on 50. You want to do this till the day you die. What are we chasing after before we die?
I think for me at this stage, it's I see the appeal of getting into licensing and IP work. You look at every contemporary large artist, they all in some form of way are doing some kind of, it's not just them solely doing their own thing. They all kind of somehow, some way are working with some other brand. And I'm just like, it makes sense to help, you know, if regardless, if you're looking to start like a brand, or you're the artist, your real name, and that is your brand, either way is a brand. You know what I mean? Like how you want to, no matter how you look at it, you're going to be known as a brand. That's just what it is. So, I mean, like to help you spread your brand, if you're looking to be in any career, it doesn't matter if it's art or if it's, you know, you name it, it's, you have to keep, there is a growth that has to keep happening. You can't stagnate in any aspect. And I think for me per se, being, you know, doing original artwork for such a long time, I can translate that over to IP now a little more organically, and then help get fresh eyes to my original works. And it just keeps ping-ponging off of each other. Like I create original work, I can translate that to IP. The IP might inspire me to create new original work, and then I can keep spreading that back to the IP, and it can keep going back and forth. And then, you know, like, so as I get older, getting into more IP work and licensing will allow me to have more time to do the original work, right? So like I can get income coming in through royalties or however I want to handle it with the licensing, and that will give me the time to do more sculpture work, or, you know, get back to doing canvas painting or whatever that itch is I need to scratch, you know?
Yeah, I think it is weird that there's a trajectory that happens more and more. You see it in large scale. You see that people that start with resin, they eventually move to soft vinyl or Sufubi, and then they move on from there. And people that are in soft vinyl or Sufubi, because we love kaiju or love what we do, we inevitably want to do some kind of IP work with Toho or whoever. Mm-hmm. And there's just something, it also is just like a notch on the belt. Like, look at what I've done. It feels good.
It's kind of all of that. You know what I mean? Like, there's just, over the course of time, when you look at like the people that have come before you, they've all kind of eventually gotten to that same conclusion, right? I think it's just, we all eventually get to this place. It's just some faster, some shorter than others. You know, like it depends on, you know, what the drive of the artist or the luck of the artist as well. I mean, like some people come out the gate and they just nail it. And some people take them 30, 40 years before they get recognized. I mean, like, and when it's your time, it's your time. You know what I mean? Sometimes there's not, you might not ever hit it, but like, I think it's, you know, but for me per se, like this is, you know, this is clearly like my goal going forward. Like I like to get into more licensing. That's what I'm trying to do, you know, and you said about like Toho, like when with what I do, I mean, like, film-wise, Godzilla is for sure the holy grail of this toy art form. And then, like, for me lately, I've been going into more like the TV series. Like, I've been really like heavy into Ultra Q. Like, just I mean, I'm a big fan of. I love Twilight Zone, like the original Twilight Zone. I love black and white stuff. So like that period of time, like in the 60s, man, like I don't know what was in the water back then, but like they just nailed it. And this, there's something that it translates so well to, you know, indie stuff, because when you look at like, if we just came into like the world with the way movies are now, like you couldn't replicate that, but like we can go back to the crude stuff that was made in like the 60s. I'm like, oh, I can make my own version of that. Cause like it was so, you know, crude then. You can kind of mimic it now. A lot of people can in their own homes. So that kind of leaves the possibilities where like you can kind of make that. You're capable of making that, you know, like that, like the, so it's cool to be able to do that. And it's still something that's very magical about that era periods of pop culture and entertainment that still holds pretty solid today, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as a side note, I saw a crazy fact about Twilight Zone. There was an episode where this guy had two kids and there was a helicopter above them. Well, the helicopter ended up falling and killing them all, which changed child actor stuff for the rest of time. Like safety and procedures and stuff. So that show's wild. It is crazy to think that like the next step obviously is that. And then it's like, you get to this point where it's like, now we have all these streams that we're able to travel down. I can license, I can do my own. And no matter what, people are really going to be excited about what I make because you've put in the time and have an audience that is sold on who you are as a person.
I think so. I mean, yeah, I hope so. I mean, like I want my, I do though. Like, I want the people that, you know, I've brought this up before, but I want the people that, you know, are my fans that support me in my work. I want them to feel, you know, happy with what they're spending their money on, you know? So like, yeah. Overall, I want that feeling for everybody at every possible level.
Yeah. I mean, if we can talk about the business side for a second, you doing this, it's tough, right? Like Toys on Tap is a company and a business. Mm-hmm. And we do have income from it and we do spend and it functions like a normal business does. But I don't support my wife and I on this. And I have another job and she has a job.
Sure.
And so it's like you're doing a different side where this is your full-time thing. So even if we're kind of feeling burnt out with toys or even if that doesn't matter, like you have to kind of keep going. What is that like?
Well, that's the thing, man. Like if you're doing a job that you did before it became your job, then you're still going to be very happy to do it. I mean, don't get me wrong. This is a job and there's definitely days where I don't want to do this. But I'm like, things have to get done. And then, you know, the more you can keep pushing forward, you will always find that happy place again. Especially if you had that happy place in this before you did it, it will always be there. You just got to find it again. You know what I mean? Like I was a toy collector before I became into it. I mean, like it's all these things as we talked kind of just kept falling in line, and it kind of, you know, in hindsight, it kind of felt like this was my trajectory going back to when I was a child. Like this was bound to happen on a long enough timeline, right? I mean, I'm at this point of the timeline. I don't know what's going to happen from now until the day I do die. Like I can try to nudge it in different directions, but like the fate of this is going to happen is going to happen. And I have no control over it. It's just bound to go in that direction. Yeah. But like being able to see like the path. So like, I don't run out of ideas. It's just most of the time, it's just, I don't have enough time to do all the ideas, you know, like I love this stuff. Like my free time is still me looking for toys. Like I'm on like all the auction sites and then looking for like, I have something that I'm collecting now. Like I'm eyeballing every way I can get my hands on these things. So like I started doing that and you know, it's like, there's just so much out there. I just, when somebody says, oh, I can't find anything. I'm like, how is that possible? Like there's literally everything you can possibly imagine today. There's some community dedicated to it. There's no way that you should have no like I don't have no hobbies. I don't have this. How's that possible? How you have no interest? You have nothing. Like, there's, out of all of the stuff you see today, there's nothing like this. Like, I don't know how that's even possible. Yeah. You know, so like, I mean, I think it comes from like social media. It drains people away from actual real life. And a lot of people kind of get wrapped up in it. It's a terrible thing, but it's just, I'm trying to raise my kids with the discipline now, especially that, you know, I've gained through literally all these different things, especially like even with martial arts. I mean, like these things actually all matter. So like, I'm trying to like, you know, instill discipline of like, you got to have control over what you put your time and energy into. Cause it all will eventually culminate into something. And if you put all this time and energy into doing fucking nothing by like being online and just arguing with people, that's going to be your fucking career. And like, is that what you want to do? Like, no. So, I mean, the discipline of trying to constantly like, you know, look for something that incites you, that is there. You just got to like, people can find it. I think everybody can find it.
Yeah. It is crazy when people say like, I don't have a hobby. There are people that collect the clips that are on bread. Like, yes, people collect those. And so like,
there's something there. Yes. There's something for you to do. Yeah. Like, you have to, like, there's gotta be something, and not just getting high and fucking doing whatever. Like, there's stuff to do. I mean,
yeah.
I think maybe it's also like, I am a little older than, you know, you are smarter people, and like, I come before the YouTube culture, you know, so like, I got to see a lot of these things be created. And so like, to me, it's still like, there was a time when you couldn't do this. Like, you're doing a podcast right now. I mean, like, I'm on a podcast with you right now. This is, you know, like, I was here before that, and I listen to podcasts all the time. I mean, like, I'm in my spray booth. I probably consume weekly 12 hours plus of content of, you know, because I'm in my booth and I'm just spraying away and listening to like podcast after podcast. So like, I consume so much, and then, you know, like, it's interesting. There's a lot out there. So having people like yourself that's getting into this lane of podcasting, at least partially dedicated to toys, it's, there will be a market for that. There's collectors out there. You just got to tap into who are they collecting and interviews with them. You know what I mean? Like, that's it. So as long as you're in the community of what you're doing, you'll find it. Like, if you were, you know, a toy podcaster and you're not a toy collector, like, you're going to have a long road ahead of you because you don't know where you're going with this. You know what I mean? But if you're constantly looking to interview people that people actively want to, you know, have put time and effort into, or looking to know more about, you'll get the ears. And it's just time of you building up enough podcasts and going, oh, he has a catalog. I can listen to this one and I can binge 13, 14 hours of other content. It's just of time of building that up.
Oh yeah, dude, we just hit 5 years this year. Mm-hmm. There's so many episodes. There's people that will tell me that, like, as they're driving to a show or something, they're like listening to toys. Yeah. And my first thing is like, that's too much of me. Like, don't do that. but yeah, you're right. Like, it all forms. Like, I tell people, like, look around. What do you think that's missing? Go fill that spot.
Yes,
that's
That's very good advice. I think that's very good advice.
You've been around so long, and through the last two episodes, we talked about some of the missteps that you kind of did, and we also got to talk about the reality that, like, people reach out to you and you respond, and they're so shocked that you respond. And so, to kind of mitigate maybe people that reach out to you as well, I want you to kind of give some advice to people starting in soft vinyl. Like, I know that the scene is so different now than when you started, but if there is things that can be imparted to the next people that are going to keep this up long after we've gone,
Yeah.
What does that look like?
I mean, I think it's just, it really does boil down to an honest to godness love of what you're doing, right? Like, people a lot of times look for like the monetary value of stuff, and they're like, I can pursue a career based on what I perceive can be that number I can get to. But I'm a firm believer in the whole, like, if you love it and you really truly love it, the money will come in time if it's meant to be. You just gotta push through, right? I mean, to giving advice to people, like, I mean, it's just, it's easy to get disheartened by like time. It's with any career, it can be grinding, right? I mean, like, and especially like, I think a lot of people look at the art field as this, it's just art, but no, man, like it's very grinding, and in many ways more grinding than, you know, corporate jobs, because you're this all kind of falls to you to be everything. You got to be the one that comes up with the stuff. You got to be the one that executes it. You got to be the one that, you know, like you're every department. You're not just that one position, you know? So like it's definitely challenging to a lot of people. It's daunting. It's like everybody wants it right now. The having the patience. So I mean, like, most people that start getting into to design work, toy making, and I'm just like, you know, just, you have to be a collector in some capacity. You can't just, if you're not, you will eventually hate this. I mean, like, you're going to hate the people, you would hate the day-to-day thing. You have to be an addict to this to begin with. And then you'll keep coming back to it no matter what. So like it has to be from the heart. And then it's just, you know, having the patience, having the, you know, surrounding yourself with other positive people. I mean, it's easy to get dragged down by other people going, man, my shit doesn't sell and yours isn't going to sell. And like, it's easy to fall into it. And especially if you have a bad day or a bad sales month, whatever it is, you can easily be like, yeah, man, fuck all these people or fuck all. And like, it's easy to go down that path, but trying to surround yourself with more positive people, just the constant of like picking yourself up off the floor, dusting yourself off and just keep going forward. It all builds to a bigger picture. So I mean, it's going to take time. I mean, I think that's the only way, because I get it, man. It's exciting and you're making things and you see other makers and you have I want that too. I want to be there too. It's, you gotta kind of approach it like what your destiny is going to be is your own. No one's going to have the same career as this guy or that guy. You have to like, you can emulate it and say like, I would like to be like this guy, but you got to accept your reality and it's going to be different than theirs. And that's your reality. Yeah. And you got to learn how to be happy within that. And I think that's the thing, man. Like, there's so much jealousy out there because of somebody getting something that somebody else didn't get. And I think this is a part of human nature. I don't blame people for the feelings they feel. Like, I mean, I feel it too. Shit. I mean, like, I try to work better on controlling it. You know, I mean, like, I recognize it. I get it all the time. And like, I'm very fortunate that I have such good relationships with my fans that so many of them have turned into like best friends. And we're able to separate the artist rich from the friend rich, you know? And they can come with me and they can check me on like, hey man, I saw what you said about this. It's kind of a stupid way to handle that. And I've had many times where I'm like, shit, yeah, you're right, man. Thank you. And like, and I mentioned earlier about martial arts. I've been training jiu-jitsu now for probably getting close to 8.5 years, maybe 9 years. And the lessons of that alone, because like, when you're training, man, I mean, you have to take critiques. Like when you're like, especially with like martial art, the training jiu-jitsu, man, like you can get hurt easily, right? So like I'm trying to actively strangle, break, or hurt this person. And like, I want them to get better so I can get better at what I'm doing, right? So like that being able to, before I started training, I wasn't as good with taking advice or, you know, but like being on the mats and getting beat up, like it's proof. Like I fucked up. You got fucking tapped out. You fucked up, right? When this person that did this to you says, this is how I got you. Don't do that again. It helps me be a better partner to that person. And that, you know, you do that enough, it bleeds over into the rest of your life. I mean, and it helps like, oh, this is very translatable now. Like I can try to approach life in many aspects in the same exact way. Friendships, personal life, you name it.
It seems like you're kind of describing this relationship between the art, the community, and the collection and the collecting and how they just, they flow in this like ebb and flow in this perfect thing. I love what you're describing about how people who start out collecting or doing whatever, and then become these like friends.
Yeah.
I love that. You see that at conventions a lot, where people that you started with just an interview on the podcast, or they bought a toy and you see them regularly, and then you at the next convention spend 20 minutes just talking to them because you miss them.
Yes. Yes. I mean, I'm serious, man. Like, I say the people I talk to now the most are my fans. I mean, like, I don't mean like this, like, I have levels now of like, this is the person I'm going to see at conventions. We're friendly. Then this is the person I speak to, you know, through Instagram daily. And then this is the person I have their personal text when they could text me personally. A lot of them are all, we're all fans in some way, shape or form. But like now I've had people come stay at my house for the weekend, or like we'll go on vacations together, you know, like, and like, it's funny because like this last show, again, back to Japan, I had the first week I was there, I did a gallery show. Friends of mine, fans, they came out and they were at the gallery show buying or attempting to buy stuff of mine. And then when the show was over, we went out to dinner and I treated them to dinner. You know what I mean? It's like, and then we, so it's like, it's a very unique situation, but I really appreciate it. And, you know, it's just, I think again, like I put all my dedication is into toys and some form. The people I grew up with, they had different paths in life. You know, I mean, so it would always be me talking about this part of my life and they couldn't relate to it, you know, and this, the more I got into this part of my life, the, you know, some of the friends I grew up with, we've kind of, you know, strayed away from each other because it's just our lives just changed, you know, like, and over the years, I've gotten more friendships out of people in this community. Whether it be some artist friends, a lot, you know, I mean, like, again, too, like, you're this by the position alone, I'm going to run into more fans than I would more artists, right? There's only X amount of artists, but there's, you know, 100-fold fans. So I'm going to run into more fans than artists, period. So, yeah, I have friends that are artists, but just, you know, just by the way it works, I'm going to have more friends that are fans that aren't artists at all. And I can go toy shopping with them. Like I in Japan, like I went, they came to my gallery show. They were trying to buy my art. And I'm able to separate myself. Hey, I'm at work now. This is the work side of Rich. Then it was all said and done. We went to Mandarake and hunted toys together for our own stuff. So it's like, it's very fun. It's very unique. And again, I think it's just, this part of life is this is how I approach that.
Yeah. You've created not only, I what I love about seeing artists that have been here for a while is that you've created almost a blueprint of what it looks like to do toys, and that like, and that sounds so broad and sounds like, but it is a way to like that. If you functionally don't know what you're doing, it's okay to look at this person and say, "That's how I want to do things," or "That's where I want to be." So, how do I do it?
It's one way. right? I mean, like, there's a million ways to skin a cat. I mean, like, at least with me, you can pick my brain, and I'm wide open for everybody to hear it. I'm a firm believer in, like, I don't think there's no, this to me nowadays, gatekeeping is a whole different thing, right? Like, it's not about, like,
yeah,
controlling the whole, like, I don't want this person in. It's just like, no, I just want honest people in. It's not about, like, mm-hmm. I don't want to let nobody in. I just want to make sure that the people that I'm helping out with are not just here to get in and make a quick buck and get out. So yeah, I understand what gatekeeping is now. Like, for the longest time, there'll be like artists that are bigger than me, and I'm like friends with them, and I'm like, man, why aren't they working with me or helping me out? And it's not that at all. It's just like, it's just, you know, a lot of, so there's times when they don't want to ruin that friendship. So they're like, by putting work in between us, that can cause, you know, the potential for us to have a falling out, and I don't want that. Or it's just that, you know, like, they've seen it before me and they say, all right, he's getting there, just not yet. Like, they still have a few more years to cook in that oven before, like, they could pull him out and they're ready for the world to see. So, like, just keep cooking, you know? There's a million different ways to you know, that can help artists. So, like, you know, this, for that aspect, that, yeah, that's all.
Yeah. I love the idea that you're saying that people will buy or try to buy some of your pieces, and then you'll treat them to food or dinner. It's like, that artist just paid for that dinner. Heck yeah. Like, it's like that. I love that idea. Like, hey, come buy one of my toys, then I'm going to buy you dinner.
I think it's just an appreciated thing, man. Like, I can't do that for fucking everybody, clearly, right? I can't take all these fans out, but like, the people that I've known the longest, eventually we become on that level. And yeah, I just, it's a little way I can give back, you know, like, this to show you, hey, man, like, I appreciate you, honestly, and this is the least I can do to show you my appreciations for the support you give.
Yeah, which I think is, I mean, it's one of my favorite things to do at conventions, like go out to breakfast with people and do that kind of stuff. I mean, Rich, you've given me 3 episodes. You have, you've not wanted to plug yourself each time, which is so fun, because you pass it down to other people, which I love. So I think how we're going to end this one is, I need you to think of one line, no commas, don't extend that, one line that you want everyone to know that describes you and your career. One line.
Genuine. I'm just about one word.
Get out of here. Yeah. I mean, it's true, because you, on this side, which if I can speak to that, like, not only seeing, like, your passion and your, like, the business acumen that you've had to learn along the way, and the desire to help other people, and the desire to make a life better for yourself and better for your family and a land across the ocean. Like, all these things speak to a genuine love for what you do. And so if people don't get that from meeting you or, like, through an Instagram DM, I hope that they see that through these 3 videos that we've gotten to spend a couple hours just chatting, because you really are genuine about what you do, why you want to do it, and really what it means to you.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's, I don't need to give somebody this long speech or this quote. I mean, like, just be genuine. That's it. Yeah. I mean, it's not that difficult. If what you're doing falls into that, you're going to be okay. But if you're doing it for any possible other ulterior motives, it's not going to work, and it's not genuine. Just be genuine.
Yeah. Rich, thank you for doing the 3 episodes of Toys on Tap.
Thank you. I appreciate the time to do this. So thank you.